Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I am one of your hosts, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, President and CEO of The Connection, and I have a special co-host with me today, and that's Beth Connor, who is our Chief Administrative Officer at The Connection. Good morning, Beth.
Hi, Lisa. Nice to see you this morning.
You too. Sunday morning, Beth.
I know. It's early.
It's early. But we're really excited to bring you another show today. Ann Baldwin, who's normally with me, it took some very needed vacation time to visit family. So Beth is joining me today. And Beth and I are really excited about our guest, for many reasons. And joining us today is Karen Buckley. She is the Vice President of Advocacy for the Connecticut Hospital Association, CHA, since July of 2015. Prior to that, she served as CHA's Director of Government Relations. Karen helps lead the development of CHA's advocacy priorities and is integral to the development of the strategies to implement these goals. In addition, she leads and coordinates initiatives and collaborations with many external groups, including state agencies, on joint advocacy, education, and relationship building activities. Karen also is responsible for advocating for legislative and regulatory improvement on behalf of member hospitals and their patients in Connecticut. She's also a team leader for the Connecticut Healthcare Association Collaborative, which is a coalition of five Connecticut healthcare associations that work together to improve public policy and quality of care for patients across all healthcare settings. We're really excited. Welcome, Karen, to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. And in addition to that, Karen also sits on our Connection Inc. board. So we're really excited to not only have Karen today as a board member, but also representing CHA and to really talk about all of the exciting things that's going on, especially during this time with COVID.
You've got your ear to what's going on, right, Karen?
Yes, I do. COVID is my every moment of every day these days. The frontline, some of the frontline workers who are dealing with some of the sickest patients. So we're actively working on their behalf so that we can respond to all of the patient needs.
So I know people are interested about the vaccine, right? We're hearing about it in the newspapers. We are anxiously awaiting it to be rolled out in Connecticut. What can you tell us about the vaccine? When will it be here? Who's getting prioritized? What do you know about it?
Sure. Well, so we're working very closely with the Connecticut Department of Public Health. All of the hospitals participate in at least weekly conversations with the Department of Public Health, getting ready for the distribution. The priority groups have been just set, if you will, by the on the federal level. And so the frontline workers or healthcare workers, people who are working with people in nursing homes and hospitals, medical practices will be in the first in line to have the available vaccines. And then it'll move to nursing home patients or at-risk patients and then slowly work down that line to the available public. It is expected, or we're told to expect, that the first vaccine, which is a Pfizer vaccine, would be available sometime around mid-December. December 15th is a date that's been floating around. And we do know from our weekly huddle calls with providers and representatives from across the continuum that Pfizer has been manufacturing the vaccine with anticipation of it being approved, with the intent of shipping as soon as that final approval happens. So we are working with DPH every week to have a plan in place to vaccinate all those folks who are responding to those who are sick and in need. And then we're working with them kind of on a long-term plan to how we can work together to get everybody vaccinated who needs to be vaccinated.
Is this vaccine going to be given in a round of two series, or is it just one?
It is. All of the vaccines that are currently in process for approval require two vaccines about a month apart. The vaccines are currently being expected to be provided through an operation on the federal level called Operation Warp Speed, which was put in place to not only address kind of fast-tracking, if you will, vaccination products, but also therapeutics and drugs to help treat COVID-19. We have, I think, three or four that have come through that process already. So the intent, as we understand it, and guidance is coming out every day, is that the feds would provide the first round of doses to the states and then would hold back, if you will, the second dose so that we would ensure that every person who got the first dose would get the second. And there is a national software system that they've made available to states and providers called VAMS to help track patients so that we know that when Lisa comes in for her first shot, she'll get an email or a notification to come in for the second, and that we will ensure that there's enough vaccination available. So hopefully that will help. One of the complicating factors about at least one of the vaccines, the first one, the Pfizer, is that it requires a very, very cold storage. I believe it's negative 70 degrees. And so hospitals throughout the state have moved to ensure that they either have this specialized storage on site or have ordered it to arrive by the middle of December. It's called ultra cold storage. The other two vaccines that are kind of in the pipeline do not require the ultra cold, just regular cold storage. So one of the reasons that they're starting with healthcare workers and this vaccine is that hospitals are able to store it properly and maintain the temperatures needed to keep it safe and effective.
Karen, I know that you do need the two vaccines in order for it to be effective, correct? I've also heard a little bit about side effects potentially from that first vaccine. So what can you tell us about the vaccine itself and, you know, what early reports are in terms of its effectiveness and what people will experience?
So the vaccines that are being discussed right now both have a very high level of effectiveness that's coming out of the studies that have been completed. And what that takes into account is having the two doses. Right. So the expectation is that you should have the two. I don't know how much data there is out there if you don't end up getting the second dose. I think the at least if you talk to medical professionals, they think, well, there's at least some level of immunity that you and protection you build up, but that really to get to the 90 to 95% effectiveness, which is really what's being reported out there, you need to have the second dose. And the time period for the second dose, depending on which vaccine you have, there's a Pfizer one that's at least 21 days, and Moderna is the second one, and that's at least 28 days. As with any vaccine, and also in this case, any of the therapeutics under Operation Warp Speed or medications, there is a strong reporting system in place for any adverse events that is routinely in place for vaccines. And pretty readily known, and it's a way in which the feds can take, if you will, immediate results and information from providers and use that to act appropriately if necessary relative to the vaccine or the other medications. You know, one of the things that we're looking at as hospitals and healthcare providers is, as with most vaccines, there is a thought that if you have the vaccine that you may develop a low-grade fever as a result of the vaccine, which is not uncommon for vaccines. But how do we handle that when we look at the responses of the ability of staff to respond to things? Because right now, as you know, for COVID-19, one of the indicators that you look for in screening for COVID-19 is a low-grade fever or fever. And to the extent that you're vaccinating all these people who may then develop a low-grade fever, you have to figure out how you continue to protect patients and monitor for symptoms that are from the vaccine and symptoms from COVID. So one of the items we continue to struggle with and working with DPH on is what's the guidance they're going to give us, because we do expect that there will be folks that have a low-grade fever, and one of the ways that we're hoping to manage that and looking to manage that is how we vaccinate folks, right? So if we're going to see that, we're not going to have everybody in one location, ICU, get vaccinated at the same time necessarily, so that we have a steady stream of employees who can meet needs.
So how are things going now, you know, in this month of December? I know everybody's worried about the holidays, about, you know, contact with friends and family. How are things at the hospital these days?
So I think things are, from Kinetics' perspective, going as well as can be expected at this point in the second wave. You know, we have been fortunate that we've been able to meet patient needs and have enough bed capacity and flexibility within the system to meet patient needs. And unlike some other states which have been experiencing some issues with bed capacity, that being said, the numbers are increasing quite rapidly of cases in Connecticut, and that is a concern. So, you know, the one message that we continue to convey is wash your hands, wear your mask, keep your social distance. We encourage people to stay with either their pod or in their bubble so that you're not exposed to a lot of people or exposing others, because you can be asymptomatic and positive and not know it. We have seen an increase in people going out and getting tested. And just want to remind folks, you know, that is a mechanism to kind of understand your status at the time of the test, right? So it's a point in time indicator. It's
right.
It's not at the end all be all, but it is an indicator of where you're at. That should not be permission to go out and do anything you want to do. You know, have large parties or large gatherings. We would encourage folks to try and enjoy the holidays with a hope that you'll all be able to enjoy the holidays together in a larger group next year, because we need to keep the numbers under control. There's kind of two issues with wearing masks. One is keeping stopping the spread as much as possible. And the second is, you know, we heard this early on in the pandemic, flattening the curve. And what we mean by that is, you know, trying to spread out, if you will, those that might actually get the vaccine so that they're not all surging at the same time and needing something at the same time. We do track available beds, both ICU beds and available beds in hospitals. And hospitals look at that every day and can surge and create new capacity as needed. We also track ventilators and other key items that are needed for treatment. One other positive that we've seen And the second wave is that the length of time or length of stay that someone is in a hospital for COVID has reduced from what we saw in the first wave. There's a couple different reasons for that. One is treatment. There are some new treatments modalities that have come from the federal government. Second is, during the first wave, we were kind of learning to fly the plane at the time that we were flying it. And so we've learned a lot about treatment. During the first wave, our clinicians were on the phone multiple times every week talking about things they were seeing and sharing information, which really helped to allow clinicians to, change how they were practicing and delivering care to meet patient needs. Because it was originally just thought to be a respiratory disease, but as you probably know, it has impact for clotting and other system issues. So as that developed, the delivery, how care was delivered has changed. In fact, initially, the first, I don't want to say first line of treatment, but one of the things that was used was ventilators, and that's really something that's used further down the line after other things have not been successful at this point. And that seems to have created better outcomes for patients overall.
That is good news. I guess the point is, too, Karen, as you mentioned, you hear some people talking and they'll say, well, we're going to get together. Our whole family's going to get together. We're all going to get tested ahead of the party, right, ahead of the gathering. And then if everybody's okay that day, then we're going to get together. But what you're saying is no. It's a point in time. It does not guarantee mm-hmm. that you're COVID-free, and you can't take that risk.
Right. I mean, I, as a personal example, I had my family tested prior to the holidays. It was my same bubble that I've always had, but we did test because we have some folks that have risk categories. And that being said, we still spent probably almost all of the day in masks internally at the house. So, it's, you should still take that extra step to be cautious, right? You should assume kind of people around you could be contagious and not put yourself at unnecessary risk. There's really no reason for it, just for perhaps a little bit of discomfort with a mask.
So let's just play out the scenario. I get my vaccine, right? The first wave mm-hmm. of vaccine. Now, that does not mean that I'm not going to stop wearing a mask, that I'm not going to stop washing my hands, that I'm not going to do any of that. And I wonder how you feel about, what the guidelines are, how much are they or will they not change once we roll this out as far as, protecting yourself and following the general guidance. I'm just assuming that that's not going to change yet. Is that correct?
Right. I'm assuming that the guidance on mask wearing and social distancing and not large gatherings will be in place for quite some time.
A while.
Because even with, remember, the production of the vaccination, they have to get these vaccines to every state. Mm-hmm. And while the numbers seem big, they're really not that big when you look at who needs to get them. So I think the goal first is to do that phase one, which is healthcare workers and elderly in congregant settings, which are like the most at risk. But I think the general public is not going to see the vaccine until next year, maybe spring, maybe later, depending on how the production of the vaccine goes and the approval process. So I think, people, mask wearing and social distancing will be the norm for a little bit longer. And if we all kind of take that seriously and then get vaccinated, we hopefully will have a different summer ahead.
What have you heard about the state and lockdowns?
So that's a great question, and I think a lot of medical professionals are debating that now. So certainly the activities of reducing large groups together and all of those measures have been helpful and continue to be helpful. I think the concern that I've heard being raised about the break December, you know, after the Christmas holiday into the new year, is that folks are concerned that the alternative will be people are together during the holiday and more likely to gather together. And it might not have the desired effect. So what Rhode Island is doing right now, I think they're at 14 days or trying 14 days of shutdown to kind of stop the spread. And part of the reason they're doing that, as I understand it, is because they are concerned about available bed capacity at their hospitals.
Okay.
And so they're trying to stop the spread. So it is certainly true that if you kind of look at wave one, when no one went anywhere and interacted in any way, kids weren't at school, you know, you weren't going to anywhere but the grocery store, that, you know, there was, I think one could argue there was less spread. But, you know, there are ways in which to balance things. And I think that's what the governor in Connecticut is trying to do. He's trying to balance, you know, because we can't have an economy, quite frankly, where every restaurant and every business closes down. That has long-lasting effects on individual people, right? The economy and individuals, right? If they're not working, how do they pay their rent? How do they pay for food? How do they feed their kids? How do they get, you know, get kids where they need to get to? So I think, you know, they're trying to be thoughtful about that. The idea behind it would be, you know, everybody kind of stayed home and it would help control things. If everybody did stay home, it probably would help control things. I think the concern is between Christmas and New Year, there's no school, lots of people gather together during family at the with family at the holidays, and that might defeat the purpose of trying to create you know, less spread. It may actually have an alternative.
So that's
I think that's the actual intellectual conversation that's going on right now, which might be the best opportunity for us to help stop the spread.
So much to think about. Karen, we're almost out of time here. What would you tell our listeners in terms of what they can do individually to get through this season?
You know, I think just, you know, this is an opportunity to embrace that this year is just going to be different. It's not going to be the traditions you've always had, but hopefully we will, if everybody, you know, stays with their bubble, keeps their mask on whenever possible, washes their hands all the time, and doesn't interact where they don't need to interact, that we'll all be able to enjoy all of the holidays next year. That's certainly my hope. And, you know, to take the time to do nothing if you need to, or just call a friend, you know, it's a little bit different because you're not going out to eat, but to try and find a different way to connect with people, I can assure you that everybody is feeling the same way and looking for some connection. So finding that creative way to have a connection that you wouldn't have, whether it's a text or just a phone call, quick phone call to check in, I think that helps everybody involved.
That's well said.
We're really grateful, Karen, not only that you're on our board, but we're so grateful for the work that you're doing in Connecticut, and this was really a wonderful show today, and providing us and our listeners with information on the work that's happening with the vaccine and your role and getting involved in this is just really so instrumental for us. And I want to invite you to come back again once the vaccine gets rolled out and to talk more. This has been a great show, and what I'd like to do is just thank you, Karen, and thank you, Beth, for being here today. But most importantly, we want to thank our listeners right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
There's a land that I heard. The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.